The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Well, we got a lot going on in this fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHG, including the president setting his sights potentially on other countries, maybe perhaps even Greenland. Welcome back, 855-839-1210 and on X at Rich Zeoli. Appreciate you being here today and every day on the show. So, yeah, then just so you know, I am not exiting Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. That was incorrect fake news that was just tweeted out on social media. I'm not exiting the station. I will still be on the station Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. And you can listen to the podcast earlier than that if you like. It's up to you. You can listen to it later than that if you like. Up to you. That's the beautiful thing about the day and age we live in, this digital age of people wanting things on demand. You can have it on your time. You can listen over the airwaves. You can listen on the podcast. You can listen on the app. You can listen at 3. You can listen at 4, at 5, 6, 10:30 p.m., 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know your personal habits, whatever you want to do, but you can do it. And it's a shame how some people in the trades write this. So somebody just said, I'm exiting WPH. I'm not exiting WPHD. I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here. Anyway, so the president's hinting that they may take Greenland. Greenland officials are now scrambling to meet with the White House over the latest comments that came out over that. And Michael Reagan passed away. We will miss him. We remember the time he was on the show. He was on with me. And Matt, to his credit, Matt DeSantis found the interview that I did with Michael Reagan several years ago. So we'll play that for you before this hour ends. And I wanted to get into this Minnesota a little bit, because, you know, Tim Walz, what a dope he is. And he's pretending to be this anti-fraud crusader. This is still the biggest, by the way, story of my mind politically outside of Venezuela. And so, you know, the Senate is going to vote on a measure to restrict Venezuela strike timing. Senator Rand Paul is just speaking out about that. I'll get into that this hour as well. But the biggest non-Venezuela political story is Tim Walz and the fact that this disaster, the fraud that occurred here. His daughter, Hope, came out and spoke and admitted there was enough truth to the alleged billion-dollar fraud scandal plaguing Minnesota. And she opened up about her father's abrupt decision to drop his bid for a third term. So Tim Walz, his daughter Hope, admitting this, and this is what she said, cut number 8.
But it's like, it's not about him, it's about he's the other side for a big group of Americans,
yes.
I feel like.
Yes, and I think he was popular during the campaign last fall.
Yep.
And he's still in office and he was running again. And so it's just kind of an easy thing for them to pick up on. Mm-hmm. And I think there's enough truth to the fraud claim, like things that they were able to twist it and amplify it and whatnot, because it is being dealt with. They were just able to frame it in a way that benefited them.
It's gotten under people.
It might be accurate. There might be enough stuff there. You know, it might be. And Tim Walz is pretending he's a big fraud. He's a big fraud fighter. Oh, yeah, he's a big fraud fighter. This is him, cut number 7.
If you attempt to try and collect paid family and medical leave illegally, you will be prosecuted and you will be jailed. It's as simple as that. So do I think people will try and do that? Certainly, I think people will try and do that. They're not going to get away with it, but they'll do that.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to get away with it. They're not going to get away with it. I mean, $9 billion will get away with it. I mean, $9 billion will literally get away into the hands of fraudsters. But, you know, and then it takes the feds coming in to arrest everybody. I mean, they'll get away with it under Tim Walz, but just not under the feds. So, you know, there's that. But I mean, they won't get away with it once the Trump administration and the FBI, they get involved. They would get away with it, though, under Tim Walz. And they did get away with it under Tim Walz. And, you know, that's what happened there. But again, accuracy matters. Oh, what a loser. I'm telling you, this guy is the absolute worst. The fraud scandal here, as you get into some details about this too, and you try to understand a lot of this now, DHS, for example, the welfare fraud. The level of fraud here, and the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal pointed out some of the details of this. So you go back to 2020. You have this pandemic era program for feeding children. Schools are closed. That was orchestrated by the brother lover, Ilhan Omar. Okay, so the brother lover wanted to make sure that the kids could eat, except the kids didn't eat because that's what happened. It was a pandemic era program under Joe Biden, feeding children when schools were closed. The scope of the investigation has grown as prosecutors uncover how many more programs were looted. Defendants allegedly set up sham businesses and falsely claimed to provide meals to children. They paid kickbacks to parents to enroll kids without autism in autism treatment. And they billed Medicaid for phony housing services to addicts, among other scams. Some state workers raised red flags. The money kept flowing. Mr. Waltz at first defended the welfare grift as regrettable consequence of his state's charity by saying the following quote. This is an actual quote from Tim Waltz. Ready? Quote. Right now, we're the most generous state in the nation when it comes to these programs and services, and we should be proud of that. And he said last April, he said that. That was last April. And he stuck to that line. Up until 5 minutes ago, he stuck to that line. We are just so generous. And you know, when you're generous, these things kind of happen. People kind of take advantage of you. These things kind of happen. Well, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? What are you going to do? As the welfare heist has drawn national attention, Democrats have blamed Tim Waltz and claimed the problems are isolated to Minnesota. While the state lacks spending oversight enabled the fraud, its vast entitlement programs invited it. So this is what you have to understand, all right? Minnesota, for the longest time, was hailed as a model of progressive governance. You remember Tim Waltz's famous comment, right? You know, somebody's neighborliness is another person's socialism. Do you remember that? He said that during the campaign. They were viewed as a model of this. This is why I always thought it was nuts to pick this guy to run on the ticket in the first place, because, I mean, he's a socialist. He's a flat out socialist. And you were going to win Minnesota anyway. The Democrats were. So what did he get you? And how does a guy like that win over people who are middle of the road when he comes from a state that brags about their Scandinavian style entitlements? Now, if you understand the thinking of Kamala Harris, and I caution you by using the word thinking, but if you understand, I guess, the strategy around her decision, it was that she wanted somebody around her who sounded a lot like her, who thought like her and acted like her and was not going to upstage her. And there was no way Tim Waltz is going to upstage her because he comes out like a giant goofball doing his impression of Tommy Boy and, you know, putting tampons in the boys' bathrooms. And the guy's a joke. So there was no way he was ever going to really upstage her. So Kamala Harris decides, OK, she's going to be in a position right now where she's going to pick Tim Waltz. He brings nothing to the ticket. And among socialists and the Democrat Party, and they've become one of the same, all these people, they turn around and they go, all right, well, look at this model of Minnesota, this Scandinavian style entitlements. Democrats boast a one seat majority in the state Senate and two House vacancies, and they've given Republicans temporary control of the House. Progressives may be happy, they write, to sacrifice Mr. Waltz to preserve their control in St. Paul and avoid a national debate about whether the vast tentacles of the welfare state have grown too big to manage or justify. And this is what I think you have to really understand. Part of the reason why I'm so against all these government social programs is not because I'm a mean guy. I happen to be a mean guy, but that's not the reason. It's because when the government gets into this game of charity and this government gets into this game of trying to help people, it inevitably invites fraud. And because government is inherently incompetent, it's incompetent at checking and controlling and managing our money. Government can't spend our money properly. Government can't have oversight over our money properly. You have to realize that key point. For those of us that oppose these large welfare programs, it's not, despite what critics say, because we're mean and we don't care about other people and we want people to starve and die and blah, blah, blah. It's because the government is incapable of keeping an eye on our money. It wastes the money. It flagrantly wastes the money. And then they turn around and brag about it and go, well, we're just such a generous state. So if there might be some fraud, well, you got to realize, you know, that's just who we are. We're just so generous deep down inside. We can't help it, our generosity. And for those of us that are sick and tired of this, and you look at the welfare state and you look at the way that money is wasted, you turn around and you say, this is exactly the problem here. The problem is that this invites... fraud. And you had that. You had fraud tourism. You had people coming in from other states to take advantage of Minnesota's just willingness to just dish out money and dole out money. And when you see that and you think about Tim Walz and some of the other things that he did as well, it's not just the fraud, by the way. It's not just that. He also tried to redirect blame to groups like white men. Yeah, no. He tried to say that white men were the problem. You remember that time during the Somali fraud scandal came out, and Tim Walz came out and said basically right now the following quote: "It's not law-abiding citizens. If that were the case, there's a lot of white men who should be holding a lot of white men accountable for the crimes they have committed." What the hell does that even mean? It means, please, don't look at the Somali fraud that happened under my watch as governor. Let's make this a race thing. So nobody was making it a race thing. Nobody was. Everybody was just focused on the fact that you found these Somali gang leaders who were finding ways to exploit Somali people and then getting Somali people to say that their kids were autistic so they can get money out of this. Tim Walz tries to turn it into a race thing. He goes, well, look at all these, you know, what are these white people? But that was, his whole scam was, oh, let me pretend like I'm the face of white men. Remember, that's why part of the reason why they put him on the ticket was to say that he was the face of white men. That Tim Walz was the face of white men in America, white alpha men. And it was the most laughable joke ever. I mean, it was so laughable. But, I just think it's hysterical. I really do. I think it's hysterical. He was by far the biggest caricature of what a politician sent to go on the campaign trail to go and look like a white male to appeal to white men was supposed to be. Like, if you crafted this guy in the back room, if you said, let's create a Tim Walz, let's create Tim Walz, let's make Tim Walz, let's do a caricature of him and create a goofball who's supposed to go out there and then run around and say to other white men, this is what a tough alpha male looks like, it would be Tim Walz. Because it's like a Disney character. Like, it's not real. It's like a Disney, it's like a made up Disney character, like a superhero, but not a superhero, the opposite of a superhero, an anti-hero, and a freaking goofball. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that theory. Klobuchar wins the Minnesota gubernatorial race, appoints Walz to fill her vacated Senate seat. I think Democrats would be wise to just let this guy go. And I think my theory is that the level of fraud here, from the Somali food program to the daycare program, and think of what it really took to ultimately bring down a governor. Like this Nick Shirley guy and what he did by going out there and exposing all this. This guy picks up his phone and a microphone and goes out there and starts exposing all this, brings down a sitting governor who happened to have been the running mate, the VP running mate in the United States. Just think about that. Think about that, and brings him down. So it says a lot about citizen journalism in this country that he was able to do that, and I think it's fantastic. I really do, in a big, big way. All right, quick break. The big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Veneria. Veneria Dental, two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, veneriadental.com. I'm going to tell you about Emmons Roofing and Siding. Tomorrow, Krista, the design expert, is going to come. Tomorrow, we're going to finalize all the plans, and then on Monday, the demolition begins. for the kids' bathroom. I'm really excited about that. Not only is Emmons the company that is going to take care of you and your home from the exterior, they also have the interior kitchen and bathroom remodeling as well. And I know they're going to do a great job for me because they did a great job in our old house remodeling the kids' bathroom and our master bathroom and the kitchen. But it is winter, and you got to think about your roof. And when you use Emmons for your roof, you are going to get the lifetime warranty, the exceptional warranty on the Owens Corning shingle, the best in the business lifetime warranty on that shingle. So, and on the workmanship too, not just the shingle, but the workmanship as well. So I would hope you'd reach out to Emmons today and use them because they are our local company and our great friends, and they serve our whole region, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And you can trust that Emmons is going to take great care of you and your home, just like they're taking great care of my home. And that's why I recommend them. They did my roof in our old home, did the windows, did the doors, did siding, and then they're going to do the kitchen and bathroom remodeling in our new home as well. So I'm excited about this, and I know that Matt Kelly and the whole team at Emmons appreciates you and appreciates the support you've given them over the years. Just go to emmonsroofing.com. That Owens Corning Platinum certification, by the way, they don't hand that out to everybody. That is a very, very key thing. You gotta realize right now, Owens Corning Platinum certification. They actually check up on their contractors to make sure that they're keeping it and earning it. So just do that today. EmmonsRoofing.com, EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so the president apparently wants to buy Greenland. Marco Rubio telling lawmakers that Trump wants to buy Greenland. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here in our fourth and final hour. Secretary of State said the White House is using rhetoric to pressure Denmark into negotiations. So we have a clip of the president talking about Greenland, but basically what he's saying is this is a way to get them to the table, and this is a way to get them to ultimately let the United States purchase Greenland. I mean, strategically, we've talked about this over the last year as a national security priority for the future because of the Arctic and the oil and the security routes that Russia would use. And there's another factor too that, you know, I read this fascinating article over Christmas break. I did read it over break, believe it or not. It was all about how it's so cold in the Arctic that they, and the northern lights cause such a magnetic disruption, which is obviously why, you know, in the movie, the Christmas Chronicles, you can't see the North Pole because the northern lights mask the North Pole. And obviously that's why Santa, you know, nobody's ever seen him. The northern lights do a great job of that. But they also disrupt machinery, radar. They disrupt missile guidance systems. It gets so cold there that oil freezes, pipes within machines burst, and all of these things happen. It's very difficult. Fuel freezes. So as you look towards the future and you think about if there ever was a kind of a battle in the Arctic we're still trying to figure that piece out. You know what I mean? And Russia's got a little bit of an advantage on us in some ways because they've had more of a presence up there, but this administration has made it a priority now to say, all right, if we ever had have a battle in the North Pole, like let's say we had to protect Santa Claus, like in the movie Red One, how do we make sure that we can do that and not have either the northern lights and the magnetic field disrupt the ability of us to fire missiles, or our stuff just freezes up and everything like this? So a lot of that is a big ongoing conversation. But where Greenland is, and Greenland is, and Iceland, if you think of the opposite, so Iceland's green and Greenland's ice. It's kind of like a good way to think about it in terms of it's cold. But the president's recent threats against Greenland, according to the Secretary of State, do not signal an imminent invasion. The goal is to buy the island from Denmark. Now, we're $39 trillion in debt. I don't know how much money we have to buy an island, but I'm sure that it's one of those things where, much like buying Alaska, Seward's Folly, I'm sure at one point in the future we'll look back and say, well, better use of our money than, excuse me, some other ways we could have used our money. Rubio's statements say the following. President Trump has made it well known that acquiring Greenland is a national security priority of the United States. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt echoing in a statement that it is vital to deter our adversaries in the Arctic region. The president and his team are discussing a range of options to pursue this important foreign policy goal. And of course, utilizing the U.S. military is always an option at the commander-in-chief's disposal. Now, I don't imagine for a second the president is thinking that he's going to invade Greenland. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that that was what would happen. It gets into a whole can of weeds here because you're talking about NATO. And they've said that if we were to try to conquer Greenland, because it's part of Denmark, that would be the end of NATO. I mean, that would be it. And, you know, so that's, I don't think that's going to happen. I can't imagine that would happen. I've never thought that's going to happen. But, you know, Trump likes to bluster and it's what he does. And it's like, I mean, polls show Greenlanders are opposed to becoming a part of the U.S. Well, I mean, they don't have to become a state either. They could become a protectorate. There's lots of different options here. Stephen Miller said on CNN, nobody's going to fight the United States militarily over the future of Greenland. Well, it is true. I mean, they're not. They're not. They're not going to do that. That's very, very true. But I think the reality of the situation when it comes to Greenland is that we want it. And when the president says, look, we have the military, if we wanted to get it, we always could take it that way. It's kind of like one of those situations where I think Denmark then turns around and says, all right, how much? You know, because Trump is just unpredictable, and that's always been his thing. He's just always been unpredictable, and he's probably mad at Rubio right now for going out there and saying that this is just the president's bluster about negotiation. I don't know. I would imagine he'd say that, I guess. I don't know. But I don't see us invading Greenland anytime soon. But then again, you know what? Hey, listen, every day is a surprise under this administration. We have every single day being just a surprise. Brian Kilmeade of Fox News talked to Senator John Fetterman. John Fetterman talked about Maduro and how all the Democrats wanted to eliminate Maduro then, but not now. That was then, not now. That was then. It's kind of like Spaceballs, you know, when, now, then, no, now. Cut 17.
So Senator Chris Murphy, your Democratic colleague, called the operation wildly illegal. The America doesn't want this war. Nobody asked for this. And I think the most important conversation to have is Venezuela is not a security threat to the United States. They're not threatening to invade us. Do you want to take this on?
I respect my friend in Connecticut, but we have different views on this and perhaps other views as well. I just said this on my social media that, you know, remind everybody that America is a force of good order and democracy, and we are promoting these kinds of values. We are the good guys, you know, let's pretend that now we are acting in a way. Now, remember, we all Democrats years ago wanted to eliminate him, and they why have a bounty of $25 million if we didn't want him gone? Why would you do these things if you weren't willing to actually do something other than harsh language?
You know who got called out for his hypocrisy on this issue is Mark Kelly. I mean, among other issues of hypocrisy, by John Stewart, of all people. I find John Stewart hysterical. Even when I don't politically agree with him, I think he's hysterical. And I think he's one of the more consistent people on the left side of the political spectrum. I remember when he was the daily host of The Daily Show. He only does it Mondays now. He does it one day a week. And I think for him, that works great. Kind of like doing an hour show. Like you give it all you got for an hour versus 4 hours where... But it's funny, too. I talked to Paul Morrow when I was up at Fox News last week. I was filling in for Jimmy. And he said to me, he goes, you know, by the end of that third hour, I'm like, oof, man. I said, yeah, try doing four. That's a lot. But anyway, I'm sure for John Stewart's perspective, doing one day a week, he's able to just really bring his A game to the table. And he's funny. I mean, he's funny. But he always went after Obama for those drone strikes. Even back in the day, he always went after Obama on the drone strikes. He was always consistent about that. And I admire that about him. I admire that because a lot of other Democrats were covering for Obama and they were like, oh, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. So we just killed some Americans with drones. They were bad guys. They were terrorists. Like, no big whoop. You know, oh, I mean, you know, I mean, he had a letter of from his attorney saying it was OK to kill them. It was fine. See right here. Look, look, it was on the back of a napkin. It was in it, a fortune cookie said, kill those bad guys with drones, even though they're American citizens. They're terrorists. Magic 8-ball. I mean, that's the kind of crap we heard from Democrats for years. Like, there was never any outrage over the killing of American citizens with drone strikes. There was never any outrage either when Obama like, blew up a wedding in Pakistan and killed like 200 innocent people. People were like, it's war. It's what happens. They didn't care. You snatch Maduro from his house, and even though Obama also went after Gaddafi, people were like, this is unprecedented. We've never had this before, blah, blah, blah. John Stewart with Senator Mark Kelly, cut number 12.
It's not complicated. If a reasonable person would think that this thing that they are asking me to do is illegal, you have an obligation. It's not an option. You have an obligation not to follow those orders.
So are the boat strikes illegal?
Well, so I've been asking this question for a long time. I'm on the Armed Services and the Intelligence Committee.
Right.
They have some complicated legal rationale, 40 pages of why these are legal. It's questionable at best. And by
but
the way,
that's my...
at first it was fentanyl, then it was cocaine, then it was about regime change, then it was about oil.
I understand.
So,
but what I'm do you see my point?
I totally see your point.
I don't.
But
I
our
don't
point,
know.
Our yeah. point is to members of the military who don't get reminded of this often. When something is clearly unlawful, you have an obligation not to follow
right.
those orders. It's a pretty simple thing, and we've seen in our history multiple times when even under those circumstances, members of the military have done stuff that was clearly over the line. We did not want that to happen.
But under the Obama administration, they did extrajudicial killings of an American citizen through drone strikes. Like, we criticize that. That's my point is there's enough gray area in some of these actions.
There is enough gray area. And the Obama drone strikes, the killing of American citizens, we don't talk about that. That's why with the Maduro thing. And I honestly, I don't think any of us have patience for boots on the ground and extended occupation or any of that. I don't think any of us do. But there's precedent to go grab a guy like Maduro and bring him to the U.S. to face justice. There is. I mean, again, look, I reviewed this. I read about it. I'm not one of those guys who just jumps on social media right away. I was at the aquarium on Saturday when this news broke. And I was taking Reagan. We had a special daddy day. And then I was taking her to get her ears pierced. I was not going to start tweeting out about Venezuela. Everybody has to give their hot takes. Either it's, you know, it's constitutional. It's not. It's like we can wait 5 minutes before we have to like jump on social media and start giving our hot takes on everything. And then I started reading about things and I said, all right, well, I read this article, that or John Yoo's article. I read about the precedent with Manuel Noriega. And I read and I said, OK, well, and also the fact that he's really not the duly elected president of Venezuela. I mean, he's not. I mean, he stole the election. He's there in the presidential palace, but he's a fugitive of the United States of America. And we grab fugitives who are wanted in this country every day around the world. We usually work with Interpol on them, but not the United States military. But, you know, we grab them every day. There's a reason why we don't let people who are criminals, we suspect if they're a flight risk, leave the country because it's harder to get them if they're out of the country. But it's not impossible. And we've done it and we do it. And there are countries that have extradition with the United States of America. Well, they'll help bring them back for us. And other times we have to go and grab them. But it wasn't declaring war in Venezuela, and it wasn't an invading war in Venezuela. I think there should be a broader debate that has, and I've said this, so I'm consistent, there should be a debate on the drug boats. And Congress should give the president authorization on this. If he really wants to fight this narco-terrorist war, then he should get congressional authorization to do so. For his own political safety and security, if nothing else. Because all this debate back and forth about legal memorandums and justifications, and yes, you will always find a White House lawyer who will justify why the killing of an American citizen is constitutional and legal and does not require a trial in absentia or any of the other stuff that they said when Barack Obama did it. Right? Obviously. So, but that doesn't give you the protection from Congress. The protection from Congress is a congressional authorization. I mean, what helped Obama get cover for that was the authorization for the war on terror. So that if ever in the future they said we're going to charge Obama for murder, like let's say, you know, before the Supreme Court ruled on presidential immunity, they said some rival Republican gets in office and says, we're going to go charge Barack Obama with murder. He killed American citizens and we're going to charge him. We'll see how this case plays out in court. Now, obviously, since the Supreme Court's ruling on presidential immunity, it'd be very difficult to do that. But I mean, the defense he would use is I had congressional authorization was the war on terror. And this was the argument and blah, 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 blah. I think congressional authorization makes it a lot easier if the Democrats get control of Congress to protect President Trump versus these legal memorandums and everything else that are written to justify and 95 pages of justification and everything else. And then, you know, also, too, the other thing is that once you give congressional authorization to the president to go fight this narco war on terror that he wants to do, it sends a message to these other countries that, hey, you're fair game. You know, I'm not looking for this. This is not war that I'm looking for. I'm giving you just simply a political explanation for the way to deal with this. But yeah, even Yale constitutional law professor Jed Rubenfeld, no fan of Trump, by the way, said it was undoubtedly legal in the editorial that he wrote for the Free Press. We cited that on the show yesterday. And we had John Yu on, who also explained why it was legal as well, what the president did. Here's Speaker Mike Johnson on the Maduro operation when the president's, you know, whether or not this was something that required congressional authorization, cut 15.
Knowledge here is that this is an operation that did not require prior consent of Congress, prior authorization of Congress. It required notification of Congress. It's well within Article 2. I know as many details as I can know before going to the SCIF for the classified briefing, but I spoke with the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense within hours of the operation commencing. The first call was from Marco Rubio at about 4 a.m. So they've done everything that they were supposed to do. This was an appropriate action, and we'll get a lot more detail inside. But they have been talking, all the administration officials have been talking to Senate and House members on a constant basis since this happened. And this is a big part of their obligation there. We'll have a further briefing for all members of Congress sometime by midweek. That's what we're planning, and we'll keep you posted. Thanks.
Now, the other thing is the political support for these operations tends to be very, very high. It's like I'm always reminded of that movie, The American President, with Michael Douglas, when they're talking about taking out that Iranian facility. And his pollster guy says, you know, what you did was very presidential. And then Michael Keaton goes in this whole rant about, you know, there's a janitor working and he doesn't know that I just gave the order to, you know, take his life and blah, blah, blah. It's a great scene, a great movie, directed by Rob Reiner, by the way, The American President. It's a really good movie. I mean, it's lefty and you gotta leave all that aside. But it's a good flick. But anyway, the point is that these things are popular, no doubt about it. And as CNN's Harry Enten points out, it's very popular. This is cut 13. Take a listen.
Okay, U.S. military ousting Maduro. Pre-ousting, what you saw was the clear plurality of Americans opposed at 47%, just 21% support. Come over to this side of the screen. After the ousting, look at that. The support through the roof. Now we're talking about 37%, well within the margin of error right here of the opposition, 38%. It turns out Americans like what they deem to be successful foreign policy operations. And in this case, they view the ousting of Maduro, at least up to this point, as a successful one, and therefore the support way up.
Yeah, before underwater, now basically even. What about the idea of putting Maduro on trial here in the United States?
Yeah, you know, part of the reason why I think that the success number is way up, and you saw it here, what was it? It was 26 points in favor of opposition, and now within the margin of error, is because they simply put, don't like Nicolas Maduro. And in fact, they believe that he should be on trial for drug trafficking. Look at this, 50% of Americans favor compared to just 14% who oppose. So there are very few Americans here who oppose it. Even among Democrats, the opposition number is below, get this, just 24%, is below 25%. So this is something that unites Republicans, it divides Democrats, and at this particular point, support for the operation way up. And in terms of those who favor the drug trafficking trial for Maduro, that is a clear plurality.
Yeah, it doesn't really even divide Democrats on the idea of a trial. They all seem to support it by and large. Only 24% oppose it for Democrats. Let's talk about sort of what the lesson.
Yeah, you see, the support is there, no doubt about it. All right, quick break, coming right back. Democrats hold a candlelight vigil for the high holy day of the left, January 6th. And remembering Michael Reagan, who was on the show, passed away Sunday, but was on this show. And we're going to remind you of that time that he was on the show. So we'll do that. And we come back as we continue our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, let's see. We got, I guess the show's almost over. We'll turn it over to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla up next. And, yeah, you'll be able to do that and hang out with him, and he'll take you home. Or do we have Penn State basketball?
Penn State's up next.
Oh, Penn State's up next. Okay. So forget it. You won't be able to listen to Jimmy. So never mind. I take it back. Would have been nice if they put it on during this hour. I'm just saying, but you know, would have been nice. So, just saying. You know, a couple of people have asked me why only an hour. Why not only an hour? I guess the question I have is, why are radio shows 3 hours or 4 hours? Where is that written in the law that it has to be 3 hours or 4 hours? I mean, there are some stations out there that are doing more hybrid things of an hour or 2 hours. But it's built on a model of people getting their cars at different times. So you got to cover this section of time of afternoon drive, because some people leave work at 3 and some people leave work at 6 and some people leave work at 5:30. And so that was the model. But that model's changed a lot. I mean, we're not in the same world we were in anymore. So when people are like, why are we doing an hour? I think the bigger question is, why are we still doing 3 hours? Why are we still doing 4 hour shows? I don't know. I mean, WABC in New York, for example, their whole afternoon lineup is now basically 1 hour shows, maybe 2 hour shows going through that. I just saw WABC hire Joe Concha from Fox News to do an hour on their station. So I don't know. I mean, the whole media landscape's changing. There's not a show on Fox News has a couple of news shows that are 2 hours, but all the primetime shows are an hour. I mean, yeah, the 5 is an hour. The 5 is the most successful show on the station, with Gutfeld coming in a close second. And sometimes they flip. They're 1 hour shows. They're not more than that. I've said to Jimmy, I've talked to Jimmy Failla about this with his Saturday night show. And I've said, you know, why isn't it 2 hours? Why? So I guess the real question is not so much, because I know as like any other disruption in anything in life, the disruption happens and people are like, oh, well, that's crazy because he's only doing an hour, so that must mean that the station doesn't want him. If the station didn't want me, I would not be on the air right now. You have to understand that. That's how this business works. If they didn't want me here, they would not let me be behind the microphone, because you know how I am, pretty hard to control. They wouldn't want me saying something. So that's how that works. You don't get a chance. The station didn't want me, I wouldn't be behind the microphone. But I wanted to do an hour because I think I could do a great hour every day. And I think with people's busy schedules, they can listen to the full hour versus a quarter hour in their car. And I don't know. I think as an industry, maybe the bigger question is, why are we still doing 3-hour shows, 4-hour shows? I guess that'd be my question. I don't know. I mean, maybe people would like to hear more variety throughout the day. Maybe people would like to hear. I've saw people saying they'd like to, like they'd like Opelka to do 3 to 6, or they'd like Sean Farish to do it. Two incredibly popular guys. Matt Rooney, great guy. Tom Hayes will be great guy. Really, maybe they should each get an hour. I don't know. I mean, I'm not the program director. I'm not the brand manager. That's not my call. But maybe the model of these big blocks of one personality or one team, maybe that's a model that needs updating. That's how I view it. Anyway, from my perspective, if you want my honest opinion, which I always give you my honest opinion, I don't have another ability not to, I think that makes a lot of sense from the perspective of now that we're in this new digital streaming era that we're in. But I got a hard out because we got Penn State basketball coming up. So to be continued, have a great night. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Penn State's next. Thank you.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.